ladies and gentlemen, and fellow golfers, for your entertainment.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa, brought to you by Hagen Oaks, America's most awarded golf facility, and Naturewood Home Furnishings, where it's all about choices and always about quality.
Thank you for joining us here on the Golf to Go Radio Hour and tuning in on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa, your host for today, along with my pal Scott Marsh. And Scott, we have had an interesting week of golf this week, huh?
You know what? We're blessed every week, but this week I feel extra blessed being a part of that first tee tournament and getting to meet Mr. Gary Player and everything that you were able to do in terms of interviewing him and hosting the event the night prior out at Del Paso Country Club. Just a very special week for Sacramento golf.
It really was. Sunday night, Gary was at Del Paso, and we had a fundraising dinner with him, and then he was at the golf tournament the next day at Catavadera, as you mentioned, and you and I got to play in that tournament, and had the pleasure of hitting golf balls off the tee in front of the watchful eye of the 9-time major winner. That was a little intimidating, huh?
Yeah, you know, and that's not going to be my best memory of the whole day, because I hit like a 30-yard line drive that rolled up against the rock, and it was completely embarrassing. But it was great being out there with Gary Player, and just to see him interact with people, you know, at age 87, you know, we always hear about Gary Player not only being one of the all-time golf greats, but just his fitness regimen being second to none, and then meeting him in person and seeing him at 87 in the shape and the spirit that he's in was just really inspirational, honestly.
You know, being on the same tee all day and hitting golf balls and not just hitting golf balls, but interacting with, you know, with four people from every group, making sure each of them felt welcome, posing for photos, autographing whatever was put in front of him. You're right. That makes for a very long day, and it would make for a long day for any of us. But to do that at 87 years old, it's remarkable.
Well, you know, and we're forgetting the biggest part of it, Frank. I mean, he hit a hole in one also.
That's true.
Out of it there in the 33rd of his career. You have three. He has 33.
Well, three must be the number.
It is. Lucky threes. Good things come in threes.
You know, we were in the fairway, as you remember, and the hole just prior to that, the third hole at long par four, and we were getting ready to hit our second shots, and we heard this uproar, this scream, and I think, you know, somebody just kind of thought, oh, somebody must have had a hole in one or something to that effect.
Yeah. And little did we know it was Gary Player himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is awesome. But Frank, I've got to ask you, because it was such a great, you know, time for you, and you've had the good fortune of interviewing so many greats of the game, to spend the time like you did with Gary Player and to interview him on three different occasions. Just what was your takeaways, and how would you put that up on some of the great things that you've been able to do?
You know, I started thinking about it the other day, Scott, and I kind of likened it to the world of golf. Gary Player, first of all, is the only person to have won the Grand Slam on both the regular tour and the Champions Tour, which I thought was a pretty remarkable feat. And when I thought about the people I have had the good fortune to interview, as you suggested, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Ken Venturi, Tom Watson, Billy Casper, Johnny Miller, you know, David Faraday. I mean, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
But Gary Player was the one that somehow had eluded me. I never was in the right place at the right time, or, you know, we couldn't get together on the phone. And so I kind of felt like I completed my Grand Slam by having the chance to interview him. And as you mentioned, had the chance to do it three times within a 7-day period, because we had him for the show. And then I interviewed him at the dinner at Del Paso. And then again on Tuesday or Monday morning at the tournament at Catavadera. You know, it's funny. He's got an incredible sense of humor, and he really thinks laughter is one of the things that adds to his longevity. He says we don't laugh enough, and it's not just laughing. It's you know, it's laughing with a deep sense of joy that not only relieves the tension in our bodies, but as he says, it, you know, you start laughing and somebody next to you is laughing and all of a sudden it's contagious and everybody's having a good time. But in my introduction to him, I suggested to the group on Sunday night, I said, you know, the man has opinions. He is opinionated. And you're probably going to hear a few of them. And I meant it in a very kind way. He got up on stage and he grabbed his microphone. And the first thing he turned to me and he said, and I thought you were the opinionated one. So,
yeah.
You know, we were off to a good start with a great laugh out of the audience. And there were just many, many times during the interviews on both days that, you know, my wife, Marcia, was doing the photos for the first tee. And there's just so many photos of me just in this, you know, holding my gut kind of laughter, you know, at things he would say. And, you know, when someone's been interviewed as many times as he has, you know that some of the answers are, you know, answers that he's given before, but they certainly sound like the first time. And it really was very exciting to be next to him and to share that time with him. And quite frankly, he was very, very complimentary about all of our sessions. And that made me feel good as well.
Yeah, well, they were fantastic. The breakfast at Cata Cordera was just so entertaining to listen to. And he has so many great things to say. And I think that some of the takeaways from that, you know, interview was just one, his just sincere respect for, you know, the U.S. and, you know, just the time frame that he grew up in and, you know, talking about world leaders like Winston Churchill and just some of the thoughts he's had. And then when it comes to the big three, just how good of friends him and Palmer and Nicklaus really were. They were the ultimate competitors when they got out on the course, but they truly were great friends who hung out and just had great times together.
He mentioned a number of times, Scott, that there will never be another big three. And he was quick to add, it had nothing to do with their playing ability. What he meant was, you know, for three people to top the golf world as they did, and to want to go out and beat each other's brains out every week and fight for what very little money they were playing for at the time. But then, as you mentioned, to be such close friends, you know, he talked about Jack coming to his ranch in South Africa and him visiting Arnold in, you know, at his home and back and forth. And, you know, when I interviewed him on the phone the first time and I asked about Arnold, he got choked up. You know, he describes Arnold as the most charismatic man he ever met and you know, the kind of savior of the world of golf. He describes Jack as the greatest gentleman he ever played golf with, which was really interesting. I almost would have thought it'd be, you know, the other way around that Arnold.
I found so interesting. They were saying Jack Nicklaus was giving him help on the driving range before tournaments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and to know that, you know, after the help, they're going to go out and play.
Right.
And as it turned out, the rest of that story was that Gary went out and beat him 6-4.
Exactly.
You know, it was interesting. I was really impressed with the fact that he has won the Grand Slam on both tours. And I suggested that during, I think it was the Sunday night dinner. And he said, well, yeah, but the greatest athletic achievement that he, in his opinion, that he has ever seen was Tiger winning the Grand Slam at 24. And his reasoning was certainly the, you know, the challenge of winning the Grand Slam is incredible. Only five people have done it, but the fact that he did it at 24, when, as he says, many people haven't even had a chance to play in those tournaments at 24 and to win all four of them, by the time he was 24, he really felt that, you know, if Tiger hadn't had the issues that he had and the health problems and trying to be a SEAL and, you know, doing whatever he did to his body, you know, in terms of the issues of the conditioning for the SEAL training and all of that, He really felt that Tiger easily would have had 22 majors.
Yeah, no, he said that. And I think maybe the most fascinating thing about what he said was, you know, just all the tinkering that Tiger tried to do with his swing. And why was he listening to people who were swing coaches who couldn't, in his mind, even clear 85 at Augusta on the back tees? And here's Tiger Woods, who's just won the U.S. Open in 2000 by 15 strokes. And I think it was interesting because just in general, I think he wasn't real high on golf professionals. Not that he doesn't respect that for maybe mortals like you and myself, but for him, he never really took a lot of golf professional advice. And he did a clinic out at Cadavedera too. And the basics were really very basic. Take the backswing back slowly, accelerate through the ball, look at one dimple when you're putting, don't raise your head until you have at least go 6 feet. I mean, these are all just real basic fundamentals. And I can tell how that kept his game so great for so long. And Frank, I'm wondering I think it's fair to say that he's the greatest international player of all time. Is that not that, fair?
Yeah, I would certainly think so. He's won over 150 tournaments on 6 continents in 7 decades. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
I think that qualifies.
Yeah. Yeah. He was also talking about fitting, and he was just sort of poking fun at it because I think he recognizes how important having golf clubs fitted to your swing and to your body type and all of that is. But as he said, it certainly wasn't bragging, but he said, you know, in the early days when we played, someone would come out and they'd hand you a club. They'd say, here's your new driver. And, it may have had a hook bias. It may have had a fade bias. It was up to you to figure out what it did and then figure out how to play that club. And I thought, wow, that's remarkable. You know, when you talk about shot making, that really describes what shot making is.
Yeah. And just going through the generations of golfers, you know, with Sam Snead and Ben Hogan in the equipment they had to play with, and then comparing what his era was working with equipment to what is today, you know, virtually uncomparable just because of the technology and how on some holes like today where you hit a sure 7-iron, like they were using 5-irons because the equipment wasn't good enough and had to keep the trajectory low enough so it wouldn't roll 20 yards off the court, you know, off the green. So just very fascinating. You did a great job interviewing him. And I liked your question about legacy. And all, you know, he's not a big person on legacy either, Frank.
No, not at all. You know, he basically said, I don't really care if anybody remembers me as a golfer, because, you know, after I'm gone, as he said, it's meaningless. He said, if people remember me at all, I hope they remember me for the, you know, for the millions of dollars in charity money that I've helped raise, for the notion of being able to help someone in a situation that, you know, may not be as good as his was, and to basically, you know, do better for his fellow man. That was pretty strong. And he said that same kind of thing both nights. And it was different questions that I asked him that got us to that answer. So, you know, there's a lot of emotion in that answer from him.
No question. He got teared up at it a couple of times. You could tell that he really appreciated being at the event. It certainly raised a lot of money for a great cause for the first tee. And just his love of kids came across too. And it was great to see the kids refer to him as Mr. Player, take their hats off to him. I know that meant a lot to him.
You know, it was funny because he said that it meant an extremely a lot to him. He said, and I'm not picking on kids because I like kids, but even my grandkids, you ask them a question and they look down at the floor. You know, how you doing? They say good. And he said, I met these first tee juniors. He had a chance to play at Granite Bay and met some of them out there. He said, my God, I thought I was on another planet. I stuck out my hand and I said, how are you, son? And this young boy, he took off his hat. He looked me in the eye and he said, I'm fine, sir. How are you? And he said, we had a conversation and I couldn't believe it. And so he is, not that he wasn't a big proponent of the first tee, but you know, firsthand, he was just really, really excited at first tee is so often mistaken as, you know, as a program that teaches kids how to play golf. Well, you know, they do maybe learn how to play golf, but that's a byproduct of the program. It's really a youth development program, and it teaches children respect and what authority is, and responsibility and perseverance, and, you know, so many of the core values. And it teaches them how to eat correctly. And those are really huge things as far as Gary Player is concerned. He, you know, he's obviously a big proponent of healthy eating. He's done so for years. Exercise, when he came into Del Paso, I thought we were going to sit down and talk about the interview. He said, "Frank, I'll be with you in a minute. I have to go to the gym and work out." The man had just played 14 holes and he was going to go work out. So, you know, I guess if you want to be 87, you have to put in the work. And that's what he said. It doesn't matter whether you want to be a good golfer, whether you want to live long, whether you want to be the best bookkeeper, you have to put in the work. And seeing people put in the work is very gratifying to him.
Yeah, and I know he wants to get to 100, and we're wishing that he does. It was a great experience for Sacramento, and Frank, the picture we got with him, I'll always cherish.
It was really exciting to have that shot on the fourth tee at Catavadera. And you know, when you think about all of the pictures he took that day, and you take a look at that photo, and it feels like he enjoyed being with us, and that's what I'll take away from that. Scott, it's a day I'll never forget, and I know it meant pretty much the same to you. When we come back, let's play the interview with Gary Player that I did for last week's show. It'll give you an insight into what he thinks about golf, life, and such. It's a replay from last week, but I think you'll enjoy hearing from him. Gary Player on the Golf to Go Radio Hour right after this.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Golf to Go Radio Hour is honored to welcome Mr. Gary Player to the show. Thank you so much for being with us. Gary is going to be here in Sacramento with the first tee for the first tee invitational and a special dinner for a select group at Del Paso Country Club the night before. Gary has fond memories of Northern California, having played here. We are so proud to welcome you, and thanks so much for being on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure, Frank, and I'm really looking forward to being there, and I hope I can meet a lot of the young guys because, you know, the youth of a nation are the trustees of posterity, and here we have the greatest country on the world, and I can judge because I've traveled more miles than any human being ever now, and, you know, I just look forward to it. It's such a wonderful part of the country, the Northern California. We played the senior tour there, and we had the most enthusiastic galleries there. It was absolutely a treat to be there, and the way they treated us as well. So it's going to be a thrill for me to come back for many reasons, to be able to give the youth a couple of good messages, to keep this country going, to meet a lot of people, and to be having a dinner and meeting a lot of people that are my elders, maybe. Not many of them left because most of my friends are dead now. I'm 87, but I'm still as fit as a fiddle. I'm still pushing 300 pounds with my legs. I'm running the treadmill at max. I've beaten my age in golf over 3,050 times in a row.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm full of energy. Yeah, full of energy. I'm like a man of 25, you see. You see, if you exercise and you sleep well and you laugh a lot, and you have positive thoughts, you can live a long time. We're supposed to live to 100. So I'm looking forward to living to 100. At least that's my dream.
You know, you've had such an incredible career, and everybody that knows you knows, you know, how many majors you've won and how many tournaments all over the world. And what I wonder is you know, as a young boy and you got your kind of your first set of golf clubs, what's the best piece of advice your parents ever had for you?
Well, the best thing that ever happened to me in my life, and though it's tough, death can be terrible, but it can also be part of life, the circle of life. And the best thing that I learned, when my mother died when I was 9, and I adored my mother. My father worked on a gold mine 8,000 feet underground. My brother at 17 left high school, and South Africa have the best high schools in the world. And he left at 17 against my mother and father's wishes, to fight with the Americans and its allies in the war. And, you know, I came home from this great school that I went to in the evenings, and there was a dark house, and I had to cook my own food at 10 years of age and nine, and also make my bed, which is an important thing for young people to do. And I lay in bed every night wishing I was dead. I was crying. Greatest gift ever bestowed upon me, the greatest gift a man or woman can ever receive, is to receive adversity, because if you can beat it, your life is full of joy, and it's a grounding that no university, no psychiatrist can ever improve on.
That's remarkable. You know, you're coming out, obviously, in support of the first tee of Greater Sacramento. Tell us a little bit about your feelings about the first tee and about junior golf in general.
Well, the first tee have done a remarkable job, and I had a whole group of the first tees come to my house in Florida, and what a great experience that was. Children of all different religions and colors. It was just so encouraging for me to see these young people taking up golf, because you see, I was a four-letter man at college, but I can tell you, they were Mickey Mouse compared to golf. Golf is the passport to the world. Golf is a game that is so different to other sports. Other sports are play and away. If you play the NFL for 3 years, you've done exceptionally well, unless you're a Tom Brady. But in golf, I won a tournament at 63. Every other sport is play and away. Golf is play and stay. It helps you to get a job in life. It's enabled me to be in the poor villages of Africa and India and yet be amongst almost every president of the last 65 years of the greatest country in the world, the United States of America. And this is what we've got to get through to the youth. We've got to make sure these young people realize how blessed they are to live here and to work hard. And so there are many messages I have that I look forward to addressing some of these young boys and girls.
You know, you certainly have a long and rich history in supporting charity as well, and your own foundation, the Player Foundation, helps underserved children around the world. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, my daughter runs the Gary and Vivian Foundation here in Philadelphia, where I am at the moment, and we had our first experience up here in Philly, where, you know, abused children, not having much of a chance in life, and we raised $700,000. We then went down to Florida and gave $150,000 of that to a place called Place of Hope, where young children that had been abused and they had foster parents there. It was so comforting to see what these people are doing. And I was astounded to know recently that one out of every six children in this great country are below the poverty line. That was a very, very surprising stat to read and listen to that. Very disappointed. You know, I've got quite a different philosophy. I say, stop giving money to people that don't like you. Rather take those hundreds of millions and put it into the youth that are going to benefit this country. That's just my opinion. But it's going to be a great experience coming down there through golf, which is the greatest catalyst for raising money. One way or another in my life, we've raised over $100 million for different charities. So I'm very grateful for what golf has done for me. My goodness me, what a sport. And as I tell young people, you can travel anywhere in the world and you can play a golf course. It doesn't apply to all sports. Probably tennis, which is also another sport, but there's not a lot of longevity there. If you look at the champions in the world of tennis, they're all retiring at 34. You know, Jack Nicklaus won the Masters when he was 46. I won the Masters when I was 42. So golf is a game of longevity, and it can help you in your business and the friends you make and the lesson you make. Having to be on time, having to respect your opponent. It has so many messages, which I don't want to tell you too many of them because I'm coming to talk there on Sunday.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned the Masters, and you have the record there, having started 52 times. How incredible is that?
Yes. Well, you know, when you exercise and you undereat and you sleep well and you laugh a lot and you do meditation and you have good faith in your life, whatever your religion may be, it's a big help. And I played in the record British Open as well, 46 straight times. So, you know, it's been a great thrill for me. And to have traveled where I've traveled around the world and the things that I've learned and learned to respect people of different opinions. You know, today I see people, if you're a Trump fan, they want to fight you. If you're a Biden fan, they want to fight you. My dad always said to me, listen to a man's opinion and you'll learn something. We've got to have respect for each other's opinions and ways of life, haven't we?
We certainly do. And I love your message. You know, I don't want you to give it all away because, as you mentioned, you're coming here to Sacramento to talk to some folks. And but I'd be remiss if I let you get off this radio interview without at least making mention of the big three. How did it feel, and how does it feel today? I guess what I want to ask is, was your relationship different when you were playing until, you know, the competition level kind of went away?
Frank, there will never be another big three like Arnold, Jack, and myself. Now, I'm not talking about playing ability. You see, in our days, it wasn't all big money and big business with private jets. They visited my ranch in South Africa. They went down a gold mine with me. We went to the beautiful beaches of South Africa. And, you know, I went to their homes, and Jack Nicklaus came to my ranch. And, you know, Arnold and I flew around the world together. We were friends for over 50 years. We traveled the world without big appearance monies, promoting the game of golf. And just what a wonderful sport it is, and raising money for people that really needed help. And there's no greater gift bestowed upon a man to be able to change the lives of people. My heritage will not be that I won the most golf tournaments in the world and I was the only man to win the Grand Slam on both tours, etc., and on 18 majors. No, my legacy, I want it to be that I helped change the lives of people that needed help, because I know what it's like. I experienced it personally, what it was like to suffer. Maybe not as bad as a lot of other people, but it was living like a junkyard dog. So it was a great lesson for me. And being with Arnold and Jack, you know, we loved each other. We were so fierce. We wanted to beat each other so badly we could taste it every time. But we all had our turns of beating each other. It turned out pretty equally in the long run. And, you know, we were such great friends, and that's not easy to do. And our friendship after the tour continued, and I just loved Arnold Palmer. He was such a good man. I get quite choked talking about him. He did so much, so kind to people, and Jack Nicklaus is the greatest gentleman I ever played with. And we had these fierce battles, and yet we could love each other and continue to strive to improve the planet.
Mr. Player, I love your message. I can't tell you how excited I am to be with you this Sunday and Monday, and to sit on stage with you and ask some questions and just listen, because your message is incredible. You're an admirable human being, and we appreciate all you've done for not only for golf but for humanity, and look forward to seeing you here in Sacramento in a couple of days.
Thanks, Frank, and God bless, my friend. Look forward to seeing you all.
Be well. Be well. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye.
It's the Golf to Go Hour with Frank LaRosa.
Golf to Go Radio Hour continues here on Sactown Sports 1140. Hi, I'm Frank LaRosa along with Scott Marsh, and we are welcoming in Mr. Greg Federson. Greg is the general manager of Mickey Grove Golf Course. Now, this is a golf course, if you've been around Sacramento for a while, you'll recognize the name, and it may have fallen off your list of places to play all the time because, you know, there was an explosion of golf courses in Northern California about the time that Mickey Grove was built. And so there were some courses closer to home. Greg, welcome into the show. I've heard some great reports about Mickey Grove and excited to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, as I mentioned, when Mickey Grove was built, it was exciting to have another new golf course in the area. And as more courses got built, I don't know, I think we tend to play our favorites over and over. And on this show, Scott and I like to like to make sure that our listeners know about all the options available. So before we get into talking about Mickey Grove, tell us a little about you, Greg. How'd you get into the golf business, and what do you do there at Mickey Grove?
Well, I was in the restaurant industry for years, and owner operator, and I was getting ready to get out of it. And one of the things I enjoyed the most was the teaching aspect of training people. And so I decided to go into teaching in golf. I played my whole life. I have a very good eye for the game. And so I got into that, and one thing led to another, and I joined PGA back in 2004 and got my membership, and here I am today.
Fabulous.
So, yeah.
You know, you kind of went at it backwards almost. You started teaching and then you joined the PGA. That's an interesting way to get into the organization. I like that. So, tell us a little bit about Mickey Grove. When was it built? Where is it located? And what do you like best about it?
Well, it was built in 1992, and it is just south of the Mickey Grove Park, between Armstrong Road and 8 Mile Road, right off of 99 in South Lodi, North Stockton area. It is maybe a quarter mile off the freeway, situated in vineyards, and it's just a wonderful little track. We've done a lot of improvements to the course. It plays friendly to everyone, and from the back tees can be a nice little challenge for the more skilled player. So
I'm happy to move up and not be quite so challenged. So I appreciate that. So if I'm standing on the first tee and I'm gonna play Mickey Grove for the first time, what can I expect?
You can expect a fair challenge. Our greens are really nestled with bunkers. That's probably the biggest challenge on the course. We've dried the course out, mowed it down, trimmed the trees up. And if you happen to go into another fairway, you still got a good shot at the green, but it might be a little challenging with the bunker situation. If you're left or right, it's going to be a challenge because you'll have to come over some bunkers, and it can be a challenge with the slope and the angles of the greens that we have out there.
I think most weekend golfers are left to right, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
So, as I remember, aren't you close to the zoo as well?
Yes, we're just south of it. The border of our property is right below the zoo in the park there.
Yeah, so, I think I remember hearing some animals as we were playing. Scott, have you ever played Mickey Grove?
You know, I hate to say it, but I haven't played Mickey Grove. I see it every time I drive down 99, and I'm like, I got to play this course, but I just haven't had a chance to get out there. And I'm just interested because you talked about, you know, from the back tees, which, you know, according to the scorecard, it's just a little over 6,500 yards, which isn't extremely long, but, you know, with the slope being at 124, it does sound like it could get challenging for a pretty good golfer.
Yeah, I'll tell you, with we have a great superintendent, Jovito Garcia. He does a wonderful job keeping the track in great shape. But people say they consider our greens some of the best in the area. They're always taken care of. We have our regular play takes care of them. We redid all the bunkers 2 years ago when we took over, and did some extensive work on the greens. And so it's a real nice play. The greens are a lot faster and a little trickier to putt than they look. So.
Yeah. And I'm just interested in general, because it seems like so many courses right now are saying that they're in the best shape they've been in years. And, you know, Frank and I've had a chance to play golf lately, and we've experienced that. You know, courses seem to be, particularly this year, is it something about what's going on right now, or is it the fact that we're in such a great weather season in mid-October?
Well, I think it's partly that, but also the fact that we did lose some courses a few years ago that helped all the courses in the area. I believe we lost four or five courses in this area, so that made it a little better for each course as far as the pool of golfers to pull from. And then with the COVID and it being one of the things that you could go do outside, we have got a huge influx of new golfers, and that's given us more money to put more money into the course, and we're definitely doing that and trying to make the course the best experience you can have.
So I'm curious, in terms of a signature hole or any one or two holes out there that people are really going to look at and say after the round, boy, that was a fun hole or a challenging hole in particular?
We have hole 15 is a par 5. It plays really long. It's generally into a kind of a cross headwind. You have a lake that you have to clear on your second shot generally. And it's a challenge. 14 right before it is a beautiful little par 3. Greens nestled right kind of in the middle of the lake, but you do have a bailout right. And then I think our signature hole for me is hole 18. It is just a beautiful little hole to finish off with. Lake up on the left-hand side of the green that always comes into play. You definitely have to figure out what kind of shot you want to hit off the tee. Could be anywhere from a driver to a 4-iron, just depending where the tees are located. And then it just, and coming up the fairway, you get to look at the newly redesigned clubhouse that we did. We totally renovated both the exterior and the interior of the clubhouse, the restaurant, put in a wood-burning pizza oven for the guests. Ooh. And it's just a beautiful hole to finish.
I think when he said pizza oven, we may have to go down there and play that course.
We need to get down there, Frank.
Yeah. We're talking with Greg Federson. He's the general manager at Mickey Grove Golf Links. Greg, it sounds like obviously there's been a lot of money put back into the course, which, as you say, you know, certainly results in better playing conditions and a better experience for the players. Does Sierra Golf Management have more than Mickey Grove under its wings?
Yeah, we have a 20-year lease on it. And yeah, we have it for a while. We're going to be here. So, and we're going to put the improvements in the course continually to keep it a great golfing experience. I mean, we have our grass tee driving range that's probably about 100 yards wide, 300 yards deep. We're getting ready to do some, develop a chipping area that's going to hopefully come along this winter if everything goes to plan. And a beautiful practice putting green that's got to be 100 feet long and 50 feet wide. So a lot of area to practice, slope and all that too. So
you said you got into the business by teaching. Do you still have time to teach, or are you one of the instructors there?
Yes, I am. I teach in the afternoons, and actually just got back into it. I've been running a couple of our other courses that we had and opening them up, and I got to settle down a little bit here, so I'm starting to teach again in the afternoons.
Tell us about the lesson facility, and is it just you? Do you have other instructors that teach as well?
I have it's myself and Austin Hamrick. He was the head pro at Woodbridge Country Club for a while, and then he came over to Elkhorn Golf Club when I was there, and now he's teaching both at Elkhorn and at Mickey Grove. He works on the junior lessons. He has junior groups both individually and group lessons for ages 6 through 18. Then he also does his personal individual lessons. I do junior lessons as well, but I generally feed him because he does a group setting and the kids enjoy that a little more than just doing a one-on-one. And then obviously I do all the adults and everything else that come in, and a single lesson, a three-pack lesson, and a six-pack lesson.
Yeah.
And so it's been going well.
Good. You know, you mentioned 8 Mile Road you know, between Lodi and Stockton. In your mind, when you say that, you think, oh boy, that's a long ways away, but it's really not anymore. And it's what, maybe 35 minutes from Sacramento, if that?
Yeah, if that, just depending on where you come. I mean, I live in Ripon and it's 27 miles. So, and it's not a bad drive. I mean, it's just straight up 99 or straight down 99 and then take a right or a left and then another right or a left and you're right there.
So if we have folks out there that want to play there, what's the best way to make a tee time?
Well, we have two options. You can give us a call and we can book your tee times. Non-members are 10 days prior to your tee time, or you can go on our booking agent, which is Golfback, and book online through Golfback, and that's a prepaid option. But it does, on the Golfback, it does book you with a golf cart. So if you think you might want to walk, definitely give the pro shop a call and then we can, book you in there in case you want to walk that day. And it's a great track to walk.
And Greg, the best part is maybe if you're taking a little trip and your wife's with you and she doesn't want to play, you can drop her off at some of the vineyards that are close by and you can make an afternoon on the course.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there are a number of them, easily 20 wineries in the area that you could drop off and drive 5 minutes to get to the golf course.
Or maybe the wife wants to play golf and the husband gets dropped off.
Huh? Either way, it both works.
So let me just throw you a curve with one last question, Greg. What's the strangest thing that's happened to you on the lesson tee?
On the lesson tee?
Yeah. we won't use any names, but you know, tell us about one of the experiences you had on the lesson tee that you went, oh, we're gonna have a problem here.
Oh, well, I'm trying to consider myself a good teacher that I can get them to hit the ball. Probably the weirdest was I had a student that I really tried, and he literally, he couldn't hit the golf ball. He didn't have the coordination. And after probably 20 times, I sat him down and talked to him and just said, maybe there's another sport you could try. we tried. He just simply did not have the coordination to make the move. It was almost as if everything was backwards except for the swing. He didn't go forward when he had to go back, but everything else was just the opposite. It was extremely interesting. So I just wasn't able to get him to get the club head on the golf ball.
Well, that's got to make all our weekend golfers.
Nothing too strange, yeah.
That's got to make all our weekend golfers feel good about their own games. If they actually can hit the ball, whether it's going sideways or not, they're hitting it anyway.
But sometimes I'd be better off not hitting the ball anyways. You know, there's an advantage to that.
Greg, we appreciate your time. Go see Greg Feddersen, PGA General Manager at Mickey Grove Golf Links. He told you how to get in touch with them, and you might even stop by the zoo on the way down there. Greg, I look forward to seeing you soon, and we'll get down there and say hi.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Frank and Scott. Nice meeting you both.
Thanks, Greg.
Well, thank you, Greg Feddersen. Thanks, Scott Marsh. And thanks to the listeners. And certainly thanks to Mr. Gary Player for making Golf2Go Radio Hour another great show. For Scott Marsh, I'm Frank LaRosa. We'll be back next week. I'll see you on the first tee.